Read by Steve Lambert. Lower Hedgemead Road. Good sign, quite literally, because I really do need to get back. Black metal gate, welcome to Hedgemead Park, down the stone steps towards that bin at the bottom. Which is handy, because I've still got this Greg's bag in my pocket, see, and I don't want Jocelyn finding it in the bin in her flat. God, doesn't bear thinking about. I could do with a sit down. There's a bench over there, if I take the path that goes left, then zags to the right. Yes, I can't have Jocelyn finding out I've been in town. You see, she stocked her fridge for me before she went on her mysterious trip. You've got everything you want here, so no need to go out. Got it? Got it. Because you don't cross Jocelyn. 6'2", raven hair, body of a girl of 20, face of a beauty of 40, eyes of a creature thousands of years old, are none too happy about it. I've heard rumours. A drunken friend once sent me a warning email mentioning a coven or a cult, though that could have been a misprint. I mean, I don't actually believe this coven business, because a coven implies interpersonal skills, and Jocelyn is very much the lone operator. Still, despite my scepticism, I'm the nervous type who doesn't take chances. So when Jocelyn cornered me in the Star and said, "cat sitting," that wasn't a request, it was an order. Because when Jocelyn speaks, you obey. Well, at least I do. Path of least resistance, eh? Now, I realise logically she can't know I've been in town, that I've left the flat without her say-so, but I'm worried she might somehow find out, through telepathy or something, or toe a frog and lizard's leg. Get a grip, man. You've not been out that long. And I did shut the window, I think. Anyway, the flat's two stories up. I don't see how the cat could possibly escape. I definitely shut it. I'm sure I did. Even though it sticks. I'll not stop at this bench, but keep going. I've got the Hayes showroom in front, beyond the park railings, and to the right, the roundabout to Walcott Street. Jocelyn's not always been a loner. She did have John for a bit, till he blotted his copybook, not only with her, but with me. But who cares about me? I'm amazed he's still alive, actually. Though he will be scarred for life. Oh yeah, quite literally. That's Jocelyn for you. I am justified in being scared of her, you know. Now I'm out of the park, through the gates, onto Margaret's Hill, as the sign says on the wall opposite. Cross the road. Now I'm looking over the railings at Walcott Chapel. 1815. Deo Sacrum. Latin's scary, isn't it? I can imagine Jocelyn dragging her latest victim in there for a quick one when she's feeling frisky. But a quick what? God knows what she's got under those black leather jeans. I suspect she might have an in-tray and an out-tray, if you get my drift. John did used to look a bit, well, tender sometimes when he sat down. Anyway, I'm turning left towards London Road. Georgian Terrace, sweeping away. You've got your basement flats, up three more stories, then attic windows. Very poetic. Just the place to write a great masterwork. Cough your last into a blood-spotted Kleenex, then die of consumption. A short and uncomfortable lifestyle, but one that's more meaningful than the one I've got. As I said, the path of least resistance. The thing is, this cat's got fleas. I mean, you can see them jumping. They're huge. Now, Jocelyn didn't tell me to groom it. Sorry, her. And I don't like doing things I've not been told I'm allowed to, if you see what I mean. But the poor thing looks so forlorn that I can't help it. Bought a special comb in town. I know Jocelyn hasn't exactly got a heart of gold, but why doesn't she look after it properly? I mean, why keep it? Anyway, I comb the fleas out of the cat's fur, which is very smooth, by the way, and not black, which you might expect with Jocelyn, you know, witch's livery, but a rich ginger, a deep autumnal red. And then drop the little squatters out of the window, which is why I keep it open. But the trouble is, the fleas just jump back in. And if I flush them down the loo, 10 minutes later, they just crawl back out. I'm telling you, they're supernatural. Now, this is what fear does to me. Most people feel sick, but I want to eat. So my tummy's rumbling now, despite the Greggs pasty, because over the road you've got the Golden Place, then the curfew, then across the junction you've got flames, kebabs, burgers, whatnot. And I know there's another reason why I shouldn't do this, as I reach the end of the terrace and trot down those stone steps to the noise of London Road. Now, you wait here a sec. I know it's not just because I said I wouldn't leave the flat, and I'm old enough and wide enough to know better, but that reason eludes me. I've just got to do it. I'm weak, you see, too weak to defy Jocelyn, yet too weak to defy my own stomach. Unstoppable force, immovable object. And the immovable object of my greed wins again. Now, while I've been saying that lot, I've dashed the Golden Place for some fish and chips and dashed back here, bottom of the steps, opposite the London Road stores. But if you want to pause and follow in my footsteps, it'll be at your own expense and you won't get a commentary, all right? So, I've got my food and I'm heading towards the King William pub. And it's now I remember why I shouldn't be doing this. Because even if I eat this lot before I go inside the flat, the cat will still know. She'll smell it on me, won't she? And that'll be cruel because it's the one thing I'm not allowed to feed her. Fish. Jocelyn said under no circumstances, in fact, on pain of death, and I don't think she was joking, that the cat be fed any fish. Now, just because Jocelyn's a veggie, except possibly when it comes to people, I don't see why the cat has to be. It does seem a little unfair. So I tell Jocelyn this in the Star. Now, this does sound hard to believe, but I do get quite brave after a couple of pints. So I make my case, and she looks at me, well, down at me, and I feel my vital organs shrivel like dried mushrooms. And she sort of fondles my shirt collar as if she's being playful, like a panther toying with its next meal, brushes her jet black hair from her porcelain face and says, in an almost seductive way, because she is a very striking woman, she says to me, I didn't know cats naturally ate fish in the wild. I must have missed that David Attenborough show about a tabby scooping a salmon from a raging river with its paw, which put me in my place. So I go past the King William, cross the end of Thomas Street and stop. Because opposite, to the left of the Walcott Terrace sign, is W.F. Dolman's, topped by a stone head, with full beard and curly hair, scowling down at the traffic blackening its face. W.F. Dolman and Son, 1837. Funeral director. On pain of death. Oh, Lord. I really don't know what to do now. I just don't know what to do with this fish. I'm passing Longacre secondhand, furniture once bought and sold, now plastered with flyers, Ripple's bath showroom below the flats of Chelsea House, then first left. A green notice board proclaims Snow Hill information. Snow Hill, as immortalised in the song by Kurt Smith of Tears for Fears fame, about the place where he grew up. You can YouTube it if you like. A pleasant tune it is too. But all I can hear in my head at the moment is the sound of Jocelyn sharpening her crimson painted claws. Luckily, next up, still on the left, is my destination, Walcott House, which is where Jocelyn's flat is. Made it. Phew. Now, all I need to do is eat the fish before I go in, make a gorilla dash for the bathroom, and wash my hands and face before the cat can smell what I've been up to. Everything's under control now, and Oh. Hang on. What's that? A red shape on Jocelyn's window ledge, squeezing under the open window, the one I was certain I'd shut. Oh, God, it's the cat. Now, I wouldn't want to live with Jocelyn either, but jumping from there does seem a bit drastic. And I know cats always land on their feet, like the buttered side of toast, but that doesn't mean they're indestructible, like those sodding fleas. So without thinking, I shout, "Don't do it, cat! You've got your whole nine lives ahead of you." And my powers of persuasion have their usual effect. The cat jumps. She disappears behind a bush. There's a shrill cry, the cat or a person, who can say? Then as I'm fearing the worst, there's a flash of ginger, and she pads towards me, right as rain, her fall perhaps cushioned by a passing child. Phew again. She comes up, rubs herself against my leg, and purrs. Now, we've been getting on pretty good since I turned up yesterday, but I can't believe this is genuine affection. After all, she is a cat. And she's after the fish, isn't she? Which I've been holding out of her reach. Because I can't feed it to you, darling. Because I might end up with a face like Jocelyn's ex. And it might not be much of a face, but it's the only one I've got. I walk towards the flat, beckoning the cat to follow me in. But instead, the cheeky girl runs off, up Snow Hill, heading towards the tower block. OK, fair enough. You want to punish me for abandoning you? Then I'll play along. For a bit. So I chase after her. She waits till I've almost caught up, then she pads ahead, as if she's toying with me, like I'm a giant mouse, which I sort of am, really. OK, don't think about Jocelyn, don't panic. So I cross to the other side and stand, just watching. The cat looks back at me, the tower looming from behind a screen of trees like, I don't know, a monument to urban living or something. Then up Snow Hill the cat goes. I follow, staying on the right-hand side of the road. This is her revenge, isn't it? No fish for me. Then I'll land you in it with my mistress by running away. She might even turn you into the giant mouse you keep behaving like. Now, I blame John for all this. If he hadn't messed up big time with Jocelyn, they'd still be together and he'd be doing the cat sitting, not me. In fact, if Jocelyn hadn't given his face a few extra contours, I'd have been tempted to do the same myself. Because although he was the cheating boyfriend to her, he's also the reason my best friend, Karen, got run out of town. And it wasn't Karen's fault. I couldn't care less where John is hiding these days. Probably South America if he's got any sense. But I wish I knew where Karen was now. She left no forwarding address and she never answers her phone. But maybe more about that later. The fish is a bad omen and I want to dump it in the nearest bin. But my mum and dad taught me never to throw food away because there are people starving in the world. So I put it in the empty carrier bag I always have with me and go on with the chase. I'm coming alongside this block of flats, Inman House, the sign says. Then a car comes down the hill and the cat crosses to my side of the road. What's the girl up to now? As she pads up the slope, I hear children. There's a play area up ahead, behind some railings. The cat heads for it, slips through the gate and disappears inside. Now, I'm anxious not to lose sight of this cat for a moment, in case she tires of leading me on this merry dance and does a permanent runner, leaving me at Jocelyn's medieval mercy. So I speed up a bit, and as I get to the play area, the cat's sitting on a roundabout, as if waiting for someone to give her a push. Well, it's not going to be me. Two can play this game, so I look all casual-like, not sure how well a cat can interpret human body language, then keep walking up the hill. Now, I'm trying not to look over my shoulder to see if she's following, So I take in the scenery, like that sign on the left that says Bennett's Lane / Dover Place. I pass a building called Inshallock on my right, and up ahead there's a road sign that says, hang on, yes, Kensington Gardens. And suddenly the cat races out in front of me, between my legs, the saucy girl, and stands at the top of Kensington Gardens, which slopes downwards. Well, if she's going to keep up with this chase, I'm hoping she takes me down there instead of up here. It'd be a nice change. But no such luck. Up the hill she goes, the cruel girl. And as the road climbs, it gets narrower. The paving stones are old and uneven, but worn smooth, I suppose by the passage of time and feet. On the left, there's a long wall covered in vines or creepers. It's quite distracting, and I manage to walk smack into the wing of a parked car, which has its wheels on the pavement, like a lot of the vehicles do up here. The cat crosses the road again, to the left, but I stay on the right, because I'm fed up of being manipulated by this creature. It's bad enough being terrorised by her owner. On the cat's side is an old whitewashed house, the sort of place I dreamed of living in when I came to Bath all those years ago from... Well, as you can probably tell, I'm not from these here parts. And although I've learned from bitter, self-inflicted experience that dreams tend to lead to... crap, I still hope to live somewhere like this one day with a nice atmosphere instead of, well, the place I'm living in now. And walking up and down these slopes would keep me fit too. Unless it killed me, of course. So while I'm thinking of finally pulling my socks up and bettering myself, I come alongside the whitewashed house, which has a sign on it that says Highbury Terrace. The truth is, I've let myself go, body and soul. Not like Kurt Smith. Google him. He's in great shape for a man his age. I've got his Snow Hill song in my head now, and it reminds me how I came to Bath in the 80s, full of hope, when Tears for Fears had that record out, an LP as we said in them days. Songs from the Big Chair, that's it. Rule the World was the hit single everybody played, though I preferred Working Hour and I Believe, a bit more downbeat, like me. Do cats like music? I did put Jocelyn's CD player on this morning, switched her black metal monstrosity for something more peaceful I'd brought, and the cat, well, she did seem to be listening, her pretty ginger head nodding from side to side. Was I imagining that? Is it possible? Can I actually pull my socks up if I've got no one to care about except me? The cat's approaching the turn for a road called Frankley Buildings, while on my side there's a white door with black studs, real old school, on a place called Vineyard Cottage. I stop by this door because I really like it. It's reassuringly solid, a reminder that some things do last in this teetering world of ours, where life gets more financially and emotionally precarious by the day. So I take a breather and look back down the slope of Snow Hill. And the view is stunning. Sunlight glints off the parked cars snaking their way down to the tower block that rises up on my right. Then in the distance, there's the spire of that church near the podium. Further back, just to its right, Bath Abbey. And behind all that, trees rise in a green mass to the horizon. And I picture the whole city cupped in a giant hand. I might write that down. But no time now, because the cat's meowing at me, demanding girl, and turning right into Chiltern Road. There she goes, padding past a house with an old sign that says Family Grocer. What is this girl playing at? I'm starting to wonder whether this is punishment for withholding the fish I'm still carrying, or just a game for two, for company. Because it can't be much fun being cooped up in Jocelyn's flat under a brutal vegetarian regime. I think she might be lonely. Because when I went to bed last night in Jocelyn's spare room, the door swished open and the cat jumped on the bed. I couldn't see her in the dark, but I could feel her weight land with a soft, pleasing bump. Then she settled on top of the duvet, in the dip formed by the crook of my knees, and I thought, well, it's not cold tonight, so why not? So, I pulled the covers back and let her, you know, snuggle against my skin. The heat through her fur on my legs, the ripple of her body against me as she purred. It's peaceful in this road. Birds singing, wind blowing in the trees. There are houses high up on the left, with gardens that tumble gently down. Something of a hodgepodge, yet very pretty, individual, very English. And it all fits. And it makes me think that we English can be rebellious, but not revolutionary. Which is why we've never fallen into the clutches of the communists or fascists, but also why we've never got behind a cause that might change things for the better. And that, in turn, might explain this country's slow decline, like a boat sinking forever, a city sucked into the pit of the valley that holds it. Or perhaps I'm projecting, because I've been sinking for years, ever since I moved to this city, in fact. I've drifted from job to job to no job, and from girl to girl to... well, you get the picture. A couple of years ago, I decided to knock romance on the head and stick to friendships. Friendships with women, because that's one thing I've always been not too bad at, actually. You know, talking in an honest and open way about... stuff. Something I've never managed with blokes. Friendships with women like Karen. Where is that lovely girl now? Oh, hang on. The cat's gone round the corner now, right into Upper East Hayes, which slopes down. Yes, Karen was great, and we were very friendly in a quiet, shy way. We both had histories, horrible histories, and it was an unspoken understanding that the bedroom would be the unmaking of us. But then Karen... beautiful, flame-haired, platonic Karen fell for, among all people, Bloody John, Jocelyn's boyfriend, which is how John got a broken jaw and why Karen skipped town before she got even worse treatment. Because I've heard that Jocelyn's even tougher on the girls who mess with her blokes, though I can't imagine how. As we pass Belgrave Road on the left, a motorbike zooms out and scares the cat. What do you call your cat? I asked Jocelyn in the Star that night. Cat, she said, with a flick of her raven hair. Just Cat, because cats like that don't deserve a name. Then she gave me a satanic red-lipped smile that sent a shiver down my trousers. The cat has stopped. She's waiting for me. Chase over, I hope. I bend down, reach out my hand. She pads forward and licks it, her tongue rasping on my fingers. And for a foolish moment, I think it's because she actually likes me. Then reality kicks in, as it does, because she's sticking her nose in my carrier bag. I stand up and walk away. Jocelyn would literally have my guts for garters. No fish, absolutely no fish, she warned before her mysterious trip, which I suspected to get her broomstick valeted. Middle Lane turns off to the right. I look down it and see the tower block rising, in contrast to my resolve, which is sinking through my boots. The cat bars my way, pleading with me, the starved look in her eyes really getting to me, you know? I flee across the road to the allotments, but the cat corners me against the fence. She's clawing at my bag, crying, desperate. What am I going to do? I know what Jocelyn said, but I can't ignore a damsel in distress, can I? And so what if Jocelyn does her worst? She can sacrifice me in Walcott Chapel for all I care. Because the truth is, if I can't feed a cat without filling my pants, I don't really deserve to be around, do I? So... I take the fish out, set it down on the ground, step back, and the cat starts to eat. I leave her to it, stumble down the hill in a daze. Let Jocelyn do her worst. Yes, brave words, but once again the reality's kicking in. Where's the path of least resistance now, eh? Is it hiding up there in the green hills, where I can see the back of the MOD complex? Or is it nearer, at the bottom of this slope, where traffic whizzes over 30-mile-an-hour signs painted on the London Road? Yes, I could chuck myself under that. The cat can fend for herself anyway. She'll have lost interest in me, now she's got what she wanted. But it turns out that I'm wrong. Because as I walk, there she is, pushing against my legs, without getting in the way or tripping me up. Like the way two lovers of comically differing heights manage to walk in step with each other, through a street, a lane, a graveyard, or even a car wash. The feeling is sensuous as she rubs herself against my thigh, disturbingly so. Thigh? How big is this sodding cat? I reach down, not daring to look, and the red fur on her head is silky, smooth, yet abnormally long. I stop before I reach the turn into London Road. My heart's pounding, not from the walk or even the fear of Jocelyn, but something else. Something I've not felt for a long time, since someone important vanished from my life. A good friend. A friend who, if I'd been less defeatist and cowardly, could have been so much more. A paw places itself in my palm. And as I close my hand around it, gently, the claws separate, grow, and turn into something else. Human fingers. Female fingers entwined in mine. Well, she says, what are you waiting for? I turn right into London Road, my back turned to the route out of town, the life I left behind those many years ago when I came here with such hopes, unaware of the catalogue of self-inflicted letdowns that lay ahead. I still haven't looked. I'm scared my heart won't take it. But this is one moment my nerve has to hold, or I'll never be happy again. Car horns are hooting like a fanfare. I turn to look at her. And there she is, in all her flame-haired glory, her beautiful, human face framed against the backdrop of QuickFit. Part of me still wants to run for the hills, from the grip of this cat she-creature, to seek sanctuary at the Ministry of Defence. But she holds my gaze, and I cannot break it. Is this possible? Am I dreaming? Not only has the cat apparently changed into a woman, in itself worthy of the Chronicle's front page, but she's changed into a woman I know and care about and thought I'd lost forever. Karen, my good friend, beautiful, beautiful Karen. It is Karen, isn't it? Yes, it is, she says, in that familiar voice, as Speedy Wash and Gardenalia come into view. Because you broke Jocelyn's spell. But how? By giving me forbidden food, of course, that piece of fish. Now, I know enough from stories that wicked spells have a built-in flaw that allows them to be undone, because otherwise you've got no way for good to triumph over evil by the closing credits. We're past Speedy Wash and Gardenalia by now, and heading towards the Piccadilly Ale House. And that's when I ask, but why fish? Why did fish break the spell? Because, she says, Jocelyn saw me coming out of the Golden Place with John one night. Turning me into a cat banned from fish was her revenge. I didn't know John had a girlfriend, especially not the wicked bitch of Snow Hill. If I had, I wouldn't have touched him with a barge pole. Yes, I say, messing with her blokes is a dangerous game, which is why we all thought you'd skip town. I visited your flatmates, we searched your room, But they knew nothing and there was no clue. I thought you'd gone forever. Jocelyn invited me for a chat, Karen explains. I was scared to go, but even more scared of saying no. I was going to be contrite. She sounded reasonable on the phone. I never thought those stories of covens and spells were true. I thought she was just a goth. As we pass the alehouse with the pedestrian crossing up ahead, she continues with her story. So I go to her flat. She slips something in my drink, and next minute, hey presto, I'm a cat. It's not been easy, I can tell you. I'd almost given up hope. Why didn't you? Give up hope, I mean. How did you think you were ever going to get out of that mess? I hoped a friend might one day come and rescue me. A good friend. My best friend. And I promised myself that if he did, well, I'd try and be a bit more brave with him than I was before. Do you know what I mean? Yes, I say, my face burning up like a beetroot. I think I do know what you mean. And it's time I was a bit braver too. We've reached the crossing opposite Morrison's. Want me to get you some more fish, I ask. No, I just need somewhere that sells clothes, she says. It might stop all those drivers from hooting their horns. I give her my jacket. I have been in a bit of a daze. And she thanks me kindly, though she does wish the jacket was just a tiny bit longer. At least I now know, before we go from being friends to something else, that Karen is a natural redhead.